Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today for this webinar, How to Avoid Being a Victim of Cybercrime. As you know, as part of our membership benefits program, OPIU provides all members with an identity protection benefit, and that's designed to help protect you in the event of an identity breach. But we wanted to share some information with you today about what can help prevent becoming a victim of identity breach in the first place. We're fortunate to have with us an expert in the field, Bill Blum, the founder and president of Alpine Business Systems, a company that works with OPIU, the internationals, to keep our servers and our systems here safe. And he's prepared a very comprehensive and helpful look at the threats all of us face every day from cyber criminals and the concrete steps we can take to protect ourselves. So after Bill's presentation, we're also going to hear from Kate Korch, our identity protection benefit provider, who will give you a quick update on our benefit. And if you haven't already registered, I'm going to encourage you to do that today so that you can best maximize your benefit. So I'm going to turn things over to Bill Blum. Since we have so many people on the phone today, we're going to ask that everybody, if you have a question, you just type it in the question box on your screen. All your phones are muted, so you're not going to be able to ask a physical question. But if you write it, we'll address them at the end of the presentation. So welcome, Bill Blum.
Thank you very much, Nicole, and thank you all for attending. As she said, we manage the technology here at the International. My company's been in business 30 years, and cybersecurity is the most important thing we do for all of our clients in managing their networks. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at technology and what you can do to protect yourself. We're not going to do a deep dive into any of the technologies that are out there. We'll leave that up to your IT professionals. We're not going to talk about DNS filters and comprehensive gateway security and SIEM and multi-factor authentication or some other products like InfoArmor that will actually alert you when your name is being used on the dark web, those kinds of things. We're going to focus on how these criminals do what they do and how you can protect yourself. So the real problem we have is that security's weakest link is the human factor, and that was said by Kevin Mitnick. He was a convicted cyber criminal, spent in a federal penitentiary for what he did back in the 90s. He now educates people cybersecurity and has a company that does that. The human factor is really security's weakest link. We have great firewalls, great antivirus, but it's human behavior, as we'll see, which is the biggest problem these days. So the goal of any cybersecurity policy and procedure is to find an acceptable balance between functionality, usability, and risk. And that basically means that the only way to be totally secure is not to connect to anything. And we know it's possible in our daily work and our personal lives as well. We want to be connected. It provides a lot of value. But there are systems that are never connected to an outside network whatsoever. Military systems, defense department systems. You can imagine pharmaceutical manufacturing systems can never be hacked. So they are actually completely segmented apart. But as I said, we can't really do that in our normal day. So the magnitude of the threat is pretty severe. If Hackers Inc. was a company, they'd be number one on the Fortune 500, 74 times the size of Walmart. That's the amount of money they steal out of the global economy every year. 2 years ago, 51% of all Americans had their personal information stolen. That number rose to over 80% now based on some very large breaches that occurred last year, like the Equifax breach. The total cost of breaches across the globe is $2.4 trillion. Yes, that's trillion. That's an actual number. That is the actual cost of cyber breaches. The average cost is about $3.8 million. They take a few hundred dollars on some ransomware attacks, and the Sony hack cost Sony several billion dollars. 90% of all the breaches were caused by human error or carelessness. We're always going to have human error, but we can bring carelessness down to zero by doing some of the things that we'll talk about today. So the federal government has several agencies besides the NSA and the CIA, which are a very secretive organization, so we don't know a whole lot about what they do. We just know they're very effective. But the organizations that we deal with and hear about on a regular basis are the FBI. They're our primary defense against cyber criminals, and they have a public-private partnership called InfraGuard, where they share a lot of information, and they will actually go after cyber criminals and any crime above $25,000. And bad guys know that. That's why they ship $23,000 worth of equipment on a stolen credit card to an apartment, and they abscond with it, knowing that nobody's going to come after them. Every president since Reagan has had a cybersecurity initiative, and Reagan is an interesting one because he went to Camp David one weekend. He watched a movie called War Games, came back to his National Security Council and said, listen, he started talking about the movie. He asked everybody to go watch it, and he said, I'd like you to come back to me and tell me if that threat is actually real, if somebody could actually hack into the North American radar system. Well, they came back 2 weeks later and they said, sir, not only is the threat real, but it's much greater than we could ever have imagined. And that's when the federal government really started paying attention to cybersecurity back in the early 80s. The Joint Chiefs of Staff every year report to Congress on our biggest threats facing the nation. And there's a typical, you know, usual suspects, North Korea with its nukes and Iran and Russia and China. But they came back in 2016 for the first time ever and said that security is our biggest, weakest area, and we are more threatened there than we are on physical missiles or whatever. The other day, a business report, a survey of CEOs, and when asked what the biggest headwinds and the biggest fears that they have are, they said they're not really concerned about a recession, they're not really concerned about natural disasters. Their biggest concern is if they got hacked or they had a breach, what that would cost their company. So cybersecurity is on everybody's minds, obviously. So there's five important concepts when you talk about cybersecurity, and this is important. Job number one is backups, business continuity, and disaster recovery. We here at the International have a state-of-the-art business continuity and disaster recovery plan in place. I encourage everybody to do the same on your personal networks, on your machines at home, your computers, all of your data, your documents, your checkbook, all of that should be backed up in a separate repository, secured and with a different username and password than you use for anything else. And I'm not talking about a synchronization technology such as iCloud or OneDrive or Google Drive. These are areas that will synchronize from the cloud down to every one of your devices. And unless you can find a way to secure them with a different username and password than your production data, those systems are vulnerable. So I recommend you use, there's many on the market, Carbonite, Mozy, very inexpensive, $50 a year, and you can back up all of your stuff. Be sure it has a different username and password than the one that you use to log into your computer. The other thing you have to remember is there's no privacy when you go on the Internet. The Supreme Court in the 70s ruled that if you use a public network, at that time it was a phone system, who you call and the length of that call is entirely discoverable. The content of the call has to be approved by a federal court in order for anybody to get access to the content of your conversations. So you fast forward 40 years and you're now in a situation where any emails that you send, anything that you send out over the Internet, the content is protected by the courts, but who you called, how long that call was, who called you, who emailed you, who you texted, that is all entirely discoverable. There is no privacy on the Internet whatsoever. Information about you and your firm is easily accessible. If you just Google your name, you'll be shocked to see what you can find. If you keep going down and you add your email address to that, information about you, your organization, your company is entirely easily gotten to because most of it is public records and a lot of it shows up in an incredible amount of databases that have been hacked and are up for sale. So you can actually purchase an incredible amount of information on anybody that you want to target. So understand that there's no privacy, and information about you is easily accessible. And, of course, nothing is free in life or on the Internet. If you're using any of these here's a first-run movie for free sites or sharing sites of music and all that, don't do it. Those are riddled with hackers. and whatever. I'm not talking about Pandora or Amazon Music or Apple Music. Those are legitimate sites. I'm talking about if you're getting something for free on the internet, you're giving something up for it. Absolutely. And then the last thing is that we have to be vigilant always. The bad guys only need to get lucky once. We need to get lucky every time to keep them off our networks and out of our data. So let's talk about the three biggest technology companies, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, your internet provider, and what does the government, what do they all know about you? They know everything. They know your personal interests, your likes, your dislikes. If you use Gmail and Google as a search engine, Google can guess your IQ within 5 points. They can keep an 18-point profile on every single one of us. So if I Googled Jaguars and Nicole Googled Jaguars and Richard Lanigan Googled Jaguars, we're going to come up with three different results based on what we've done in the past. If I was into sports, I'd get the Jacksonville Jaguars. If Nicole was into animal rights or whatever, she would get everything about the Jaguar animal. If Richie was into automobiles, he would get everything about the Jaguar automobile. They know when we go to sleep at night. They know when we check our email. They know our vocabulary. They know the things we've searched for. Not only is it legal for your internet service provider to track where you go on the internet, but they can sell that information legally, and they do. They absolutely do. And in England, privacy rights have actually been eroded to some degree because not only does the ISP in England, can they keep this information about you, but they must keep it on file for 2 years and hand it over to the government whenever they want it. So privacy rights is one of the biggest issues today, and of course we've seen it in the past few weeks with Mr. Zuckerberg in front of Congress. So there's a difference, fundamental difference between Microsoft, Apple, and Google, besides the fact that they all use the same colors in their logo, they're quite different. Microsoft is a software company. We all use their software. It's the best business software on the planet. They also make hardware, Xbox, some laptops, but they are primarily a software company. They're morphing into a cloud services company, but it's all based on their software. Apple, hardware company, 200 to 300% margins on everything that they sell. You can't buy an Apple application. You can't buy the Apple iOS operating system on any other device other than an Apple-branded device. They've managed to get in the middle of that stream on those devices. So, for instance, 20% of everything that's purchased on the iTunes store goes directly to Apple. They grossed $28 billion there last year, and they took $6 or $7 billion right off the top for themselves. Brilliant, innovative company. I use their products, but they are clearly a hardware play, consumer hardware play as well. Google, they're an ad agency. They give away everything. They give away search. They give away their Android operating system, which is why 85% of all the smartphones in the world run on the Android operating system because it's free. They give away email. They give away applications, Google Apps, free. But it's interesting. They take a lot of information for what it is that they give you for free. What you give up for this free technology on the Android platform anyway is a lot of your information. And we saw recently with Facebook. For all the value that Facebook provides to every single user, nobody really realized that just by putting a survey up, a company could actually not only mine all of the personal information, but all of the personal information of all of your friends on Facebook. By you taking a survey on Facebook up until recently, everybody that you knew on Facebook had their information fully exposed to that survey taker. So understand, you're giving up a lot of information for free technology. And of course, the criminals make offers that are way too good to be true, free music, free videos, free money. If you know any senior citizens, please monitor what it is they're doing. They prey on senior citizens. I have a personal experience of a gentleman that I know, an elderly gentleman. He got scammed via email, and they got him to give them $8,000 for the promise of winning $3 million in the Jamaican lottery. Well, there is no Jamaican lottery. So these people are very cunning. They're very convincing. Be sure everybody that you know does not fall for those kinds of traps. You always have to be vigilant as well. Criminals work 24/7, 365. They don't sit there in front of their computers. They have armies of computers doing this stuff for them. And people say, Bill, you seem a little paranoid. Well, I definitely am. But Andy Grove, co-founder and CEO of Intel, I'm in pretty good company because that was the name of his memoirs back in the 90s. Only the paranoid survive. We've got to all understand that everyone and every company is under attack. The old way of thinking is that there's only two kinds of companies out there, those that know they're under attack and those that don't. That was the old way of thinking. The new way of thinking is this. There's two kinds of companies, those that have been breached and those that will be breached. And FBI director and Lowell McAdam, the Verizon CEO, both said that. I apologize. I just saw that there's two ones up here. But everybody's got to understand the mantra today in corporate America and in law enforcement and cybersecurity is that everyone is going to be breached at some point. You better prepare for it, and you better minimize the risk of what's going to happen. So these guys, these criminals, have quite a few tools. Over 10 years ago, they came out with a self-morphing virus. This is a virus that once it gets detected, it moves to another area of the computer. They also came out with self-morphing viruses and zero-day viruses that they can create on the fly that no antivirus software even knows anything about. That was over 10 years ago. It was the death of the antivirus industry as we know it. 2009, a Russian gentleman came out with the Zeus virus, which basically sits in the middle of your browser and steals all of your banking credentials and sends it to the hacker, puts up a website that looks like your banking site, and gives them 2 or 3 minutes, including the two-factor authentication code you might get, gives them 2 or 3 minutes to get into your bank account and steal all the information. We know where he is. We know where he lives. We know what he eats for dinner. We can't touch him. He's in Russia. 2 years later, we saw a 300% increase in those attacks, and that's because he kept it for himself, made millions, sold it to other hackers, made even more millions, and then he gave it away 2 years later to any hacker on the Internet that wanted it. So we saw within a 2 to 3 month period a 300% increase in those kinds of attacks. 2013, we saw attacks targeted at the contents of RAM. When you swipe the credit card at Target, what happened was it went into the RAM memory of the computer. They got onto every single point of sale system at Target. They pulled those credit card numbers out before they got encrypted and sent off to the credit card company. 18 million times they did that. And people say, well, that's got to be a pretty sophisticated hack. No, they teach computer science students how to write that software in the first year. And it works on Apples, works on Unix systems, Linux, whatever. It reads what's in the content of RAM in the machine. Scary stuff. 2014, SSL is a way that we encrypt data. That was hacked. We remember the Sony hack. All the executives and actresses and studio people at Sony had all of their emails completely exposed on the Internet, and then they blew up all of the servers at Sony in 2014. They had been in Sony's system for they don't even know how long. Could have been a year, year and a half. It was North Koreans. We know it. Absolutely. Had them dead to rights on that one. And the only reason they did it, Kim Jong-un didn't like the movie that came out from Sony that made fun of him, so he destroyed Sony property, stole all that information. 2015, there was a massive attack at the Office of Personnel Management. Not everybody that works at the government only, but anybody who applied for a job at the government. All of the driver's license numbers, Social Security numbers, all stolen by the Chinese, and we know it was the Chinese. 23 million Americans had their information, personal information, stolen by the Chinese 3 years ago. 2 years ago, we found out about the Ukrainian power grid hack. A group of Russians hacked the Ukrainian power grid, turned off the power for 750,000 Ukrainians 3 days before Christmas. They destroyed all the configuration of the routers, switches, everything on their computer networks, put them in darkness for a week, week and a half until they were able to recover from that. And they took credit for it for several reasons. They said they wanted the world to know how good the Russian hackers were, and it was a very sophisticated hack. And secondly, they said they wanted Ukraine to know that they need Mother Russia to take care of them because the people in power in Ukraine are not nearly as good as the Russians in doing that. So they had a political and social agenda for doing what they did. 2017, last year, we saw the Podesta hack. We saw a Swift hack. Podesta, Clinton's friend there who had all of his emails stolen, 10,000 of them exposed at WikiLeaks. A 14-year-old could have done that. They sent him an email in the middle of the night on a Saturday. Looked like it came from Google, but instead of coming from Google, it directed him to a website in a province of New Zealand that was owned by a group of Ukrainians. And they directed him to go there because they looked like Google, and they said his password may have been hacked. He sent it to his IT professional, and his IT professional said, this is a legitimate email, change your password. He followed the link in the email. Very important. He followed the link in the email. It took him to a Google-looking site. He put in his current password and his new password. The hackers had that, and they had 10 days to steal 10,000 emails and expose them on WikiLeaks. They interviewed the IT professional, and he said, I made a mistake. I meant to say, this is not a legitimate email. So be very careful on what you click on, and we'll talk about that. The Swift hack, biggest bank heist in history, $75 million taken from the Bank of Bangladesh through the Federal Reserve Bank of New York into the Philippines, multiple accounts in the Philippines, and immediately flushed to accounts in China. $75 million in 45 minutes. The only reason it was stopped was a clerk at the Federal Reserve was watching his monitors and said, we've never seen this much money come out of the Bank of Bangladesh and go into the Philippines. Click. He stopped it until they could figure out what was going on. Well, it turns out the Bank of Bangladesh thought it was a good idea to buy secondhand routers that had been infiltrated by the Chinese. They spent 6 months learning all of the codes of the Federal Reserve Bank for the Bank of Bangladesh, and that's when they started stealing the money. $75 million, 45 minutes. Had he not done that, it could have been billions. And, of course, we heard about the Equifax breach last year, the credit agency, credit bureau, that was hacked, and something like 230 million Americans or citizens had their information stolen. So the perpetrators, who are they and why they do it? Well, there's five very distinct groups. There's the insiders, people who work in an organization who have some kind of a vendetta or have been planted there or whatever. They steal information. They're very dangerous, but it's very limited what they can do. They can certainly do a lot of harm to an organization, but they can't really do it on a global scale one by one. And you also have the individuals and the lone wolves who go after organizations and companies from the outside. Maybe they're targeted, a celebrity they don't like or whatever. And they're dangerous as well, but very limited. Now we're getting into the more dangerous ones, hacktivists. This is anonymous here, who believes that they're doing the world good by exposing the data that's out there. People like WikiLeaks and people like that, they have a social agenda, activists, and they believe they're doing good. I mean, WikiLeaks absolutely believes that by exposing all that information, they're exposing a lot of information that is going to make people more honest and allow people to make better decisions. I put it to them like this. I've never seen anything that they came out with that pointed to Russia, China, or Iran, or North Korea. Everything they do is aimed at the United States and Western Europe. So I believe they have some kind of a social agenda behind that as well. State-sponsored terrorists, now these have huge, deep pockets, and of course China, North Korea, Russia, Iran, all the usual suspects. This is actually a wanted poster by the FBI. We have these people dead to rights. We just can't touch them because they're in China. And they're very, very powerful and very, very well resourced. And then you have well-organized criminal networks. When you are hacked by a criminal network, not a state-sponsored agency, a criminal network, it's usually at least five or six groups. There's a group that will target, high profile, high value targets. They'll identify those. There's another group who will find out all the information on them. They'll sell that information to another group who buys a piece of malware from another group, sends it to them, and perhaps is able to hack into their, get their credentials for their banker account or whatever, and then they sell it to their subscribers that are on a subscription basis for purchasing all of this stolen data. So when we had a client one time that was almost a victim of that Zeus virus, the banking virus, their bank called them up and said, are you trying to transfer $30,000 out of your account into an account in South America? And they said, no, absolutely not. They called them back. They said, okay, fine. They called them back 45 minutes later, and they said, we froze all of your accounts. Within an hour, we had 1,900 requests from around the world to wire transfer money. That goes to show you that this organization was highly targeted, and then the information was sold to thousands of subscribers. Well-organized criminal networks. So who are the targets? Those are the perpetrators. Everyone is a target, okay? Everybody. 90% of all attacks are against small businesses, less than 1,000 employees. And most, a good percentage of the breaches are against companies with less than 100 employees. And that's because they don't pay attention to this like they should. Retailers are really attacked the most, three times more than the financial institutions are these days. And that's because retailers typically work on a very slim margin. They don't have the big pockets that the financial institutions have. And nearly all of their transactions are electronic now. So the tools of the trade, the things they use, viruses, spyware, malware, all those things, any network, and you manage any network and you see hundreds of attempts foiled every single week at the firewall level. And all this stuff is designed to steal corrupt data and steal information. And there's multiple methods of infections. You can get a piece of malware in an email. You can get it in a text. You can get it by going to a website. So people say, well, how do you get it in an email? Well, it's very simple. 98% of all email is spam. If you can imagine your inbox being 50 times the size that it is, for every email in there, there's 50 other emails that have been thrown away at the front door. 98% of all the email globally is spam and is thrown away because it's riddled with bad stuff. And it's very easy to create. People say, oh, how come I got this email? It looked like it came from the CEO up the hall. How could they do that? It's so easy to create. It's child's play to create an email. I could send an email to Nicole and have it look like it came from any one of you out there. Very easy to do. It's incredibly easy to impersonate someone else and spoof their address. You can also get viruses in email attachments. So you can get viruses in text messages now. They have viruses that by just simply clicking on a text message, it'll unleash a virus on your phone. They're very expensive viruses, don't get me wrong. A lot of these viruses and malware are incredibly cheap, and some of them are free. But the ones that you get in text are some of the most advanced and most expensive ones to purchase and to use to go after people. You can also get it in a link to an infected website. And people say, well, wait a minute. How can I get an infection by just going to a website? 1 in 8 pages are infected. And that's what Google says. And about 10,000 come on every day infected. If you think of your Word program, everybody uses Word, right? If you feed Word with a Word document, Word follows the instructions on the screen and puts everything in the right place. Everybody has Word. Anybody who has that copy of Word, that version of Word, gets that document. Word follows those instructions and puts it on the screen. It looks identical on any computer that's using Word. Your web browser is the exact same thing. It acts on instructions. But those instructions come from the websites that you visit. The website has programming that tells the browser, put images here, put text over here, put a video over there. And if you can inject into that stream of instructions to the web browser some bad stuff, you can very easily infect the computer. And that's why you see so many updates to your browsers, and I encourage you to run those updates on those browsers. You also have to be very suspicious, because that's how ransomware works. You get a link to an infected website. The criminals have created a zero-day virus, a virus that no antivirus program even knows about, and it starts encrypting all of your files on your computer. Anything it can get its hands on, it makes it unusable to you, and then they send you a ransom note. Be very suspicious whenever you see a link. Never click on a link unless you're absolutely sure it's safe. Look for the name right before the .com, the .org, in the URL. They're usually bolded in your browser. So in other words, you want to make sure you're going to bankofamerica.com, not bankofamerica.hackers.com. That's another thing you should always be aware of. If requested to change your password for a site, don't be like Podesta. Do not click on the link. Delete the email, open your browser, log into the site manually, and change the password there. Had Podesta done that, they would have never gotten access to all his emails. Confirm the identity of anyone that sends you a link or an attachment. Pick up the phone. Send them back an email, a separate email asking, did you just send me this? It's a simple thing you can do. Be very suspicious of any unsolicited emails with links and attachments especially. So a little talk about the economics of virus, malware, and spyware creation. As we said, the individuals, the crime gangs build them for their own use. They then sell them, and then they give them away. Venture capital-funded companies here in the United States build them for big profits. And Israel is probably the center of all cybersecurity research and cybersecurity, quote, tools that are venture-funded companies that create these tools. They make these tools, and they sell them to nation states for spying, gathering intel, and stealing information. So they sell them to Russia, China, Iran, and they also sell them to the United States government agencies. The NSA didn't develop the piece of software that broke open the San Bernardino terrorist iPhone. They purchased it, most likely from an Israeli cybersecurity company. So the United States government agencies do this as well. These tools are been purchased for years by the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, for doing a whole lot of counter-espionage, counter-terrorism investigations. If you ever get to see General Michael Hayden in an interview or whatever, he was the head of the National Security Agency and the CIA under three different presidents. Interesting, brilliant man. He said a few things. I saw his cybersecurity talk a couple of years ago. It was fascinating. He said spy versus spy has been going on forever, that ever since we were tribal gangs, we used to spy on our neighboring tribes to find out how we could do things better, potentially steal from them, protect ourselves from them. It's been going on forever. And he says, we do it, and we're the best at it with the best tools. May that continue forever. We do it for fundamentally different reasons than our adversaries. So we do it to basically spread our values, democracy, freedom, diversity, justice. Those are the values that we try and espouse throughout the world, and that's why we do what we do with this. Our adversaries do it for all their own reasons, whether it be China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. They have their own reasons for doing it. But we do it for fundamentally different reasons than them. He also said that cyber warfare is more difficult than conventional warfare. We don't even know how to define it. We can protect against a missile coming in. It's a hard time. We have a hard time protecting against a well-organized gang who is getting in through our networks. He also said there are honorable hacks. He said the hack, when the Chinese stole the Office of Personnel Management Information, he said, listen, they stole it fair and square. He actually called it an honorable hack. He said, because I would be a hypocrite if I didn't say that if my people went to China and we could steal that kind of information from the Chinese, he said, we would do it. He said, shame on us for allowing them to get in and do it. He said, but there's very dangerous hacks, like the North Korea versus Sony hack. He said this was the first time a foreign government destroyed American property because they didn't like a movie. And they stole billions of dollars worth of information and cost Sony billions of dollars worth of damages. He said we should have gone after them with everything we had. So a word about the future of the cybersecurity techniques. As I said, zero-day threats are out there. There's password hacking, stealth malware that we can't see or defend against. Firewalls and antivirus are completely useless against a lot of these new hacks. So the answer in the future, and right today, is SIEM, which is Security Information and Event Management, Incident and Event Management. And what that basically means is that by looking at big data and behaviors and patterns, we can begin to protect against some of these hacks and some of these threats. So in other words, I have experienced this, and so have you. I took my daughter to college. I stopped in Virginia for gas, and I took her out to dinner in North Carolina. I couldn't use my credit card until I called the bank. Why? Because the bank said, I have never done that before. So out of the millions of transactions at TD Bank that day, they picked that out as being out of my normal behavior. And that's what we're going to be able to do on networks today. We're going to be able to find out a profile on every single worker, every single individual. What time they usually log in the morning, how many files do they change on an hourly basis, what time they check their email. And if anything goes outside of that behavioral pattern, it will create an alert and alarm. And these techniques and this software is becoming available to small and medium-sized businesses today, and we're beginning to deploy it in some of our clients. Social networking sites. Okay, we use them. They're phenomenal. They have incredible value. The amount of medical research that's done on some of these social networking sites where researchers share information about cancer research, and it's just amazing. But understand that these social sites, anything you put on there, does not go away. Even if they say it does, it doesn't go away. They say, well, Snapchat goes away in a few minutes. Yeah, until you take a picture of that Snapchat on your phone, and then you tweet that out to the world. So be very careful about what you post, and please don't be stupid. You don't want to be posting that you're leaving to go on vacation, and your house is going to be empty for 2 weeks. Criminals crawl these sites and sell that information. Be careful what you post. Protect your privacy. Smartphones, everybody uses them. They're phenomenal devices. Understand that more than half of the applications take your personal information. And in fact, many of them do it without your permission. There's many stories. Google threw 10,000 apps off the Google Play Store last year because they violated their terms of service and were stealing information. I encourage everyone to delete any of the apps that you don't use, those wacky ones that a friend told you to download because it does this goofy little thing. If you're not using it and it doesn't provide real value, get rid of it, because the chances are it's taking some information that you don't want it to take. There's multiple stories about that. Uber's been dinged for that. Many companies have been dinged for that. People say, well, the Apple iTunes store, that's going to protect me, right? No. The Chinese government put out an app last year that was downloaded, I don't know how many, 50,000 times. It was on the App Store for over a week. It took everything off your phone and sent it back to China before they threw them off the App Store. Be very careful with smartphone apps. And with your smartphone, always use biometrics. Use the fingerprint recognition or the facial recognition, and use the strongest password possible. If it supports 6 digits, use the 6 digits. And before you discard your smartphone, have it wiped. There's a very simple process on every phone. It's 2 or 3 clicks, and it says, you sure, you're absolutely sure, you're positively, absolutely sure you want to get rid of everything. You wipe it, and then you can do whatever you want with it. They bought, I don't know, 50 phones at eBay one time, and guess what? They were riddled with personal information. Wipe your smartphone. You have to understand that these apps can turn on your location services anytime, anytime they want. They can find out where you are. I use Waze all the time. I use a lot of apps that know where I am, and I turn those apps off when I'm not using them. They can also turn on your microphone and camera. There's a famous text hack that was targeted at an individual that if he clicked on the text, there would have been on his smartphone pulling all the information off and be able to turn his microphone and his camera on at any time they wanted to. That's a very sophisticated hack today, but those kinds of activities, those features and functions are built into the platform. And it's a good thing they are because they allow us to use a lot of the legitimate apps. But be very careful the apps that you download and use. Wireless networks. Be very careful on wireless networks. Great technology if they're secure, but they're a hacker's paradise if they're not. And there's many more open networks than there ever were before. If it doesn't require a password, it's open and it's less secure. And a lot of the new operating systems are warning you about that, that you're on a non-secure wireless. And that means that anything that you put across that wireless network is accessible to somebody that can intercept those wireless signals. So if you ever use an open Wi-Fi, make sure you only go to HTTPS sites. The S stands for secured. It's encrypted end-to-end. And at home, always use encryption at home, which means a password that is strong on your wireless at home. You don't want people being able to jump on your wireless network without having to provide that password. And if possible, tether your phone instead of using a public Wi-Fi or use a Verizon MiFi or Jetpack or an AT&T Velocity. These are your own personal devices. Flash drives, be very careful with those. I saw a demonstration last week that a flash drive was not really a flash drive, that the computer saw it as a keyboard. It was embedded with a virus. Just by putting it in the machine, it ran a whole series of scripts on the machine. Always, always use branded thumb drives. Never use one that you found. Hackers actually sprinkle these things around at restaurants and public places. Be sure you only use brand names. I don't even use ones that they give away at trade shows anymore. We used one, and the Israelis used one to put back the Iranian nuclear program 2 to 3 years, 6 or 8 years ago. By simply putting it into a computer at the Iranian facility, it was able to crawl the network, get into the centrifuges, and actually destroy the centrifuges with simply plugging in a USB key. Always be sure your antivirus is up to date and it's able to scan anything that's plugged into your computer. A lot of companies are not even putting DVD drives or USB drives ports on their computers anymore because they don't want anything plugged into them. So in the financial community, you don't get a DVD drive or a USB port. This is a new one. Don't use these public USB charging stations. Always bring your own charger. Plug it into a wall outlet. Don't plug into just any open Wi-Fi or USB charging station because we've known hackers to go behind there, put a wireless device in there, and it's like you're plugging your phone into their computer at that point. So I stay away from those USB public charging stations. I'm going to try and wrap up in the next 10 minutes. This is the most important thing out of the entire presentation. Psychological manipulation of you into doing things you don't want to do, okay, or shouldn't do. Some scenarios, they call you up. I'm from the help desk. I'm from Microsoft. I'm from the IRS. I'm from your bank. Trust me, if Microsoft calls you, conference me in because I can't get them on the phone, and I'm a Microsoft partner. Don't fall for this. I know people at least 3 or 4 times a year, relatives of mine who come up to me and say, oh, I had my computer cleaned by this guy who called me up and said he was from Apple. And, wow, it seems like it's running a little better now. Well, he had 47 infections on his computer. He gave the hacker $225. And God knows where they were in the world, but I can tell you this, they weren't in Maryland where they said they were. This is also how Edward Snowden did it. Everybody remembers Edward Snowden? He's the guy who was an NSA employee. No, he wasn't an NSA employee. He was an NSA contractor with very little credentials to do anything. He fixed printers. He changed, toners, things like that. He exchanged mice, things like that. He had no security clearance whatsoever. But he knew three people there that did. He'd worked there for 6 years as a contractor to Dell. And then when Dell lost the contract, they liked Ed so much that they grandfathered him into the next contract, whoever got that next contract with the NSA. So he went up to three individuals with very high-level clearance there at the NSA, and he convinced them to let him get on their computer. He didn't want their password. He just was going to fix a problem for them. So they logged into their computers. He got on it, put one of these key loggers on there. The next time they logged in, he had their usernames and passwords. He used it on all three of them within 4 hours, downloaded all the information they had access to, and hightailed it out to China, and that bastion of privacy and goodwill, the Russian, Russia. So, and he's not leaving anytime soon. So, you know how I feel about that, whether he's a hero, whether he's a villain, whether he's opened up a whole debate in this country that you can believe whatever you want. You can kind of understand what I believe, but, you won't see that in the Ed Oliver Stone movie about him. That's how he did it. He lied to people because they trusted him. So be very, very careful. Paranoia is not a bad thing in this area. Wire transfers. Anybody that does wire transfers, be very, very careful. They'll register a domain name that looks like yours. You're now emailing back and forth with the hacker instead of emailing your boss or the people who are approving, and you're wiring money into some hacker's account. It comes from a principal. It looks like it comes from a finance employee requesting a wire transfer. It works over and over again. Can't believe how many times this works. If you're doing wire transfers, pick up the phone and confirm that this is what needs to be done. Don't trust an email or even a document. Pick up the phone. Have two people approve any wire transfer. Physical security, you can lock the doors in a lot of places. It's required. It's a good thing. A lot of public places, very tough to lock the doors. I understand that. Lock your computer. If you're leaving your computer, control, alt, delete, lock. This way nobody can see what's on the screen. Log off of your computer every single night. Make sure you log off. You can leave it on. It'll get the updates, but make sure you're logged off so that anybody that tries to hack in has got to know your password. Don't leave your passwords written next to the computer. If you have confidential data, you should think about using encryption on your laptops. But the single most important thing you can do is to change your passwords regularly, okay? In Windows, it's very easy. Control, Alt, Delete, change password. You want to make it very unique, different one for every site, every application, every system. Make them complex, 8 characters minimum, upper, lower, number, symbols. And keep them private. Don't put them on a post-it note. And if you can't remember them, use a password manager. I use LastPass myself. There's several out there, LastPass, Dashlane. I started using one about 3 years ago, and I tell you what, it was the best thing I ever did. It is much more secure than you keeping them in any other place that you can possibly imagine. I recommend everybody use a password manager. Make sure you set up all the recovery options as well, because if you lose that long password that you create, you may be in trouble. Never email your work products to a personal email account. Gmail reads every single email that goes past them. They don't read them. They have robots that read them. That's why if you're on Gmail and you say, I'm going to Colorado for 2 weeks, you suddenly get all the ads for Rafting the Colorado River, Eastern Mountain Sports. Don't email work product to a personal account. Metadata, there's all kinds of information behind every Word document, email that you send out. It has all the information of all the places it passed through, all the things that were done on it. Understand that if you're sending documents that you want to be sure are private except for the actual content on there, in other words, you don't want people to know who assisted you in creating the document, when it was created, the revisions you made, you want to redact that metadata. And the easiest way to do that is just converted to a PDF, and all of that metadata is gone. Or legal firms use redaction software specifically for that. It redacts the metadata, yet makes it still editable by another party. I also suggest that you check your bank accounts daily. Check your credit card accounts at least monthly. If you're in business and you don't report a breach within 24 hours, you're responsible for everything. consumers are less responsible. I also recommend now that besides using some of the tools and techniques of like the identity protection that they offer here, which is credit monitoring and identity protection and assistance if your identity is ever stolen, those are great services. I recommend everybody keep those. But in addition to that, I'm now telling everybody to freeze your credit reports, because what that does, it disallows anybody from taking a loan out in your name, because if they can't, if the bank can't get access to your credit report, you're never going to get that loan. So if somebody tries to create a loan, get a loan in your name, the first thing that the person who's granting that loan is going to do is try and get to your credit report. And if you freeze your credit reports, nobody can get to it. It's very simple to do. It takes about 20 or 25 minutes. In New York and New Jersey, it's entirely free. And if you do go for a loan, you can have a one-time passcode to let that loan agent get into your credit report. So I co-signed on my son's student loan. They told me it's locked. I gave the bank, Sallie Mae, a one-time unlock code. They got into my credit report, and my loan was approved. Here's the good news. A lot of bad news. Here's the good news. The bad guys are brutally pragmatic. They like very easy targets, soft targets, and there are plenty of them out there. If you do all the things we just talked about, you're going to be a hard target. You're going to minimize your risk. And here's the 17 things you can do at work and at home to protect yourself. Everything we talked about, backing up your data, changing your passwords, keeping your antivirus operating system up to date. If you're using XP anywhere in your life, upgrade that computer immediately. Throw it away. It's Swiss cheese to a hacker. They can get into it like nothing. Configure your antivirus to make sure it scans anything plugged in. Lock or log off of your computer regularly. Never email your work products to personal accounts. Never use flash drives you found. Beware of the apps you use on your phones. Delete the ones you don't use. Use biometrics and strong passwords everywhere, including your phone. Wipe it before you get rid of it. Don't use the public charging stations. Beware of these phone scams. Hang up the phone. Always convert sensitive files to PDF before sending them to strip out that metadata. Use secure portals to HTTPS. Every banking site is secure. In fact, Google, if you go to Google right now, you'll see it's a secure site. They know that they want to encrypt everything from you to them. Never use free music and video sharing sites. Again, Pandora, iTunes, all that stuff is great. I'm talking about the Russian sites where you're paying 15 cents a song. Trust me, Taylor Swift is not getting any of that 15 cents, and they have your credit card. Protect your wireless networks with passwords. Beware of any unsolicited links or attachments. Never open a link or attachment unless you're absolutely sure it's safe. We've had our customers email us for the past 2 years anything that they think is suspicious. 100% of them have been bad things. So if you see anything suspicious, understand that it's 100% chance that it is. And then check your bank accounts daily and your credit cards at least monthly. And then freeze those credit reports. With that, I'm open to any questions you have.
Okay, great. So we have one question from somebody on the phone. They wanted to know a little bit more about the LastPass and services like that. Is it free? And if not, what level should they be looking at?
I believe, yeah, there is a free LastPass account. You can certainly get a trial account and check it out. I believe they have a free one. You can also have a paid one for more features and functions, like just about anything on the Internet. They give it away, and then they hope that you're going to upgrade to the paid version. They also have enterprise versions for companies. My company has an enterprise version where we can control the passwords that everybody has. We can't really see them, but if an employee leaves, we shut down their access to LastPass. They don't even know what their passwords are. Shuts down their access to LastPass, and then they can't get into all of the sites.
Great, thanks. Okay, we have one more question that a user wants to know. Tell me again what I do at the end of the night before I leave my office. What do I do with my computer?
You log off of your computer. You can do a Control-Alt-Delete, and it'll show you a log out or a log off option, depending on the operating system. You can hit the Start button, and you could also choose Shut Down, Log Off. We like people to leave their computers on because we automatically patch manage everything in the middle of the night. So even if it's not logged in but turned on, you're going to get all those patches. So make sure you're logged off. And then if you're leaving your desk for any reason, 15 minutes to grab a sandwich or whatever, make sure you lock it. And the same thing, Control-Alt-Delete, right there it says lock this computer.
Terrific. Thanks, Bill. All right, I don't see any more questions. If you do have a question, you have another few minutes, you want to type it in the box, go ahead. But in the meantime, I'm going to turn things over to Kate Korch real quick. She's our president of K2 Consulting and our identity protection specialist. She's going to share a little bit of information about your benefit. All members of OPIU have this benefit, so she's going to tell you a little bit more about it.
Excellent. Thank you, Nicole. Can everybody hear me? And Nicole and Bill, can you hear me okay?
Yes, great. Go ahead.
Okay, excellent. That's great. Thank you, Nicole. As Bill stated, everyone will be breached, and everyone is a target of data breaches and identity theft. It truly is a matter of when and not if anymore. So as Nicole mentioned, as an OPEIU member, OPEIU pays for you to receive complimentary identity protection solutions through InfoArmor, a leading identity protection provider. InfoArmor covers millions of people and works with those U.S. three-letter agencies. Your complimentary identity protection program from OPEIU focuses on preventing, detecting, and mitigating identity theft, in addition to everything that Bill said. You will receive internet surveillance that monitors your identity elements, which include your name, your address, social security number, date of birth, and everything that belongs to you, even including your email addresses and phone number. When your information is being bought, sold, or traded on the dark web and underground economy, really places where you and I are not surfing and are truly dangerous, you will be notified through text messages and an email notification. InfoArmor monitors billions of data points every day. Another benefit you receive is digital identity, which is a deep internet search about you, and it provides tips to better secure your identity. Also, and I love this benefit, when you become a victim of identity theft, you have a dedicated certified recovery advocate. They will actually work on your behalf, and they will save you hundreds of time of stress and challenge, and that recovery advocate will resolve all types of identity theft, to include medical, tax, criminal, and even financial identity theft. And they will get you back to pre-theft status, making you whole again. To activate your benefits, go to www.opeiuidprotect.com. And also, if you have any questions and when you become a victim of identity theft, InfoArmor is available 24/7, 365 days a year to support you through the OPEIU dedicated toll-free number. And that number is 855-990-0994. Thank you and stay safe.
Thank you so much, Kate. I really appreciate it. Everybody can see on their screen OPIU Identity Protection Benefits website, opiuidprotect.com. Please sign up if you haven't already. And if you have any more questions, you can go to the next slide. We have an email address, frontdesk@opeiu.org. You can email us at any time, and we'll pass them by our experts, and they can get back to you with answers. So that's it. I want to thank everybody so much for your time today. And, again, if you have any questions, just email us at frontdesk@opiu.org. And I'll put in a little plug for if you want to sign up for mobile texting, text OPIU to 97779. And you'll be able to get alerts from OPIU. Throughout the year, we send various alerts on important issues and things happening within your union. You can also download the OPIU app at Google Play for Androids and at the App Store for your iPhones. Thanks so much, and have a great day, everyone.